This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guest today is Sally Weeks, and we're talking about peace on earth, which is very appropriate for this season. Welcome, Sally.
Thank you very much.
Sally is a Baha'i, and the Baha'is have a plan for peace. Tell us what that plan is.
Well, Baha'is believe that the problems facing the earth today are spiritual in nature. Hence, the solutions should be spiritual in nature, too. That's why you don't hear Baha'is out running for political office or discussing politics as a solutions. We're looking for broad spiritual answers. And these involve, well, let's start with justice, economic justice, racial equality, equality of men and women, elimination of religious intolerance.
Let's stop there just for a moment. These are goals. These are ideals. These first three you mentioned, economic justice, racial equality, the elimination of religious intolerance. How are they arrived at? Who decided on these ideals as the main spiritual goals?
Well, then we'll go back to the founding of the Baha'i Faith. The Baha'i Faith was founded by Baha'u'llah, who we believe was a prophet, a messenger of God, who came during the 19th century. He appeared, was born in Persia, now Iran, but eventually during his life was exiled and ended up in, well, what is now Israel, then not Israel at the time. And Baha'is believe that God sends messengers from age to age throughout all of history to orient human beings as to what the goals for that particular age should be, since you ask about goals. Uh-huh. And so we believe that Baha'u'llah has outlined what the goals of this age of history are. And, you know, those things now, when we talk about them, I think most people would agree with those goals. Uh-huh. At the time that Baha'u'llah voiced them, they weren't nearly so well accepted or known in the 19th century. And now I think they're general goals of most people.
Certainly, in the 19th century, racial equality, equality of women with men would have been quite a shock.
The first Baha'i woman took off her veil in Persia and died for her efforts.
Really? Mm-hmm. So she was Muslim?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. She was a well-known poet and then took off her veil and was killed for it.
I see. So there have been martyrs in the Baha'i faith. What about Baha'u'llah himself?
He was exiled to what was then and now is Acre, north of Haifa in Israel. And he was imprisoned most of his life. He did live to a fairly old age and died there as a prisoner.
Now, was he raised in Islam?
Right.
He was.
Right.
Uh-huh.
The Baha'i Faith was born out of Islam the way Christianity was born out of Judaism, I guess you would say. Jesus was a Jew.
Uh-huh.
Baha'u'llah was a Muslim until he founded the Baha'i Faith.
Interesting. You're going to Haifa soon. How soon?
On Wednesday.
This Wednesday. You're going to Haifa in Israel. Tell us where Haifa is and why are you going there?
Haifa is on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean Sea. It's in the north of what is now Israel, not far south at all from the Lebanese border. It's a large, beautiful city on the hills overlooking the Mediterranean. And the reason that it's the world center of the Baha'i Faith, and I'm going there to work. And the reason that it is the world center is because it's where Baha'u'llah was exiled to when he was forced to leave Persia.
You've been there before, you were telling me.
Mm-hmm. I've been there twice.
When was that?
A long time ago. I went in 1980 and again in 1984.
Now, you did not grow up Baha'i. I happen to know your family history a bit. I knew your parents. One of your sisters was in my high school class, Hilda. So you grew up Quaker.
Correct.
That's the Weeks family. We're a strong Quaker family here mm-hmm. in town, still are. What led you to move from being a Quaker to a Baha'i?
I was very active as a Quaker youth, and I went to a Quaker college. I went to Earlham College in Richmond, Indiana, and it was there, actually, that I became very familiar with the Baha'i faith. I had learned of it here in Champaign-Urbana, but I went to a Quaker college. It's so ironic. And I became very familiar with the Baha'i faith. I think I was particularly listening to its worldview and its idea of creating a world order, because I had just returned from foreign study in South America, and I was seeing the need for treating other countries more. To me, those of us in the United States should treat other countries the way people in Illinois treat people from other states. We should really understand that we're really all one family on Earth. It's not us and them at all. I was feeling that very keenly when I was first hearing about the Baha'i faith.
And that happened during your college years mm-hmm. at Earlham. Mm-hmm. Often college students are exploring different spiritualities, different religious traditions during those years. Mm-hmm. How did your parents react when you came home or wrote or talked to them on the phone about this exploration?
Well, first of all, let me be clear. I did not feel like I was looking for anything.
Okay.
I was very...
You were not searching.
No, I wasn't. Yeah. I was very deeply into my Quaker faith before I... those of the listeners that are familiar with Quakerism might know about the silent meeting for worship that I say we because I still feel so close to it.
Sure.
Every week there's an hour of meditation, and that meant it was very meaningful to me, that type of worship. And then, like I said, I went to a Quaker college, and it operated on Quaker principles, and I was very taken by all this. I really wasn't searching for anything. What happened was that I was with friends who were Baha'is and was just listening. And, of course, the principles, I mean, it was very easy to believe in all the principles, but that doesn't make one leave the religion they grew up in and love. So really what makes the change is when I learned about Baha'u'llah and studied his life, and then it was a matter of deciding. He said that he was a messenger of God that came to bring new teachings for this day. So I spent a long year searching and researching to decide if his claims could possibly be true.
Uh-huh.
In a way, I didn't want them to be true because uh-huh. I liked being a Quaker with uh-huh. the rest of my family.
Sure.
But when I really researched it and I prayed very hard, and I decided I thought Baha'u'llah was indeed who he said he was. So it was a matter of following his teachings then.
What would be the signs of a messenger of God?
Whoa. Wow. You know, nobody has asked me that question for a very long time, and I think it's probably in the Bible, you know, what to look for when, you know, it talks about Jesus returning, which we would call a messenger of God. I guess you have to listen to the teachings. I guess certainly most messengers of God have performed miracles. And Baha'u'llah, I believe, did that, but he said something very interesting about miracles. He said nobody that doesn't see them should have to believe them. So we don't really discuss that, because if you haven't seen it, you shouldn't be asked to believe it.
Oh.
I guess you know a messenger of God by their teachings. I've forgotten a lot of it now. At the time, I read through the Bible. Of all the prophecy of when a messenger would come, there's a lot about dates, a lot about names in the Bible. And I studied that to see if I thought it all fit, and it did.
Oh.
In Islam, too, there's a lot of prophecy about the date of when the particular imam would return, and it also coincided. I guess, you know, there are different people look for different things
sure.
for a messenger of God. I guess you would have to see what makes sense to you.
Now, when you made a decision and you say it was a conscious decision at this point, because it was a dissatisfaction with Quakerism.
Not at all. Not at all.
You described yourself as loving that tradition, but you were challenged by knowing friends to explore the claims of Baha'i about Baha'u'llah. When you made that decision, let me ask it again, was that a problem for your family?
You know, I have wonderful parents. And my father, who actually was one of the, not completely a founder of the local Friends meeting, but certainly one of the very early ones that helped get it established. And then my
and
mother.
Your father was Fran. Francis.
My father was Francis Weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he came to Urbana-Champaign in, ooh, I don't know the exact year, late 30s is when he joined the Friends meeting here, and they incorporated, I think, after he came. And then my mother joined him in the meeting in the early 1940s. My father was a very deeply liberal person, not necessarily politically. I think he was probably a Charles Percy Republican. But he was very understanding. And, you know, the interesting thing about my father is that before I became a Baha'i, I remember he and I would talk about religion. And he was a very committed Christian in terms of understanding who Jesus was and following his teachings. And I, like many young Quakers at the time, thought Jesus was a wonderful teacher, but I didn't have any understanding of the divinity of Jesus. Huh. And I think that concerned my father because he wanted very much for me to understand that. And, you know, when I became a Baha'i is when I began to understand that Jesus, in fact, was a messenger of God. He wasn't just a brilliant teacher. There was something very special about a messenger of God. And my father was very understanding. Took my mother a little longer, but okay. She's wonderful. My parents are wonderful. My mother's thrilled with my going to Haifa be able to do what I want to do now.
Yeah, wonderful. Let me reintroduce our guest for listeners who may have joined us later. Sally Weeks is leaving Wednesday for Haifa, which is the Baha'i World Center in Israel, and will be there for how long?
At least 3 years. That's
You've
my commitment.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you a volunteer? Will you be paid? Will you receive? How's that all work?
Baha'is that go to the World Center to serve are, by definition, volunteers, but our needs are met.
Okay.
While we're there, they will have an apartment for me.
I see. And let me just encourage listeners. This is a live call-in show, and even though it's New Year's Eve, we are live, and you may call us today. The phone number in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And we actually have a live engineer here, too, and so Brett Paulson will be taking your calls. And then you'll be right on the air with our guest, Sally Weeks. People listening on the Internet may also call us at 1-800-222-9455. So that's 1-800-222-WILL. And again, the numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. So if it's a long-distance call, use the 800 number, 222-Champaign-Urbana, 333. And I see we do have a call already. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. A call to ask if the Baha'i religion is monotheistic.
Yes, it certainly is monotheistic. Baha'is believe there's one God, and he's known by different names in different religions, but it's like saying in English it's God and in Spanish it's Dios. We believe it's one God, yes.
I see. Well, where do Baha'is have religious services in a small town?
Baha'is in general, all around the world, tend to worship in their homes, although in many towns now there are Baha'i centers. In Champaign-Urbana, we have a Baha'i center, which actually serves both Champaign and Vermilion counties. But even with the center, Baha'is tend to meet in homes. We have devotional programs in our homes. We have children's classes at the Baha'i Center, but also sometimes they do it in homes. Are you asking about a specific small town?
No. I was just thinking, I thought that I'm not sure about that, about what I'm about to say, so you can confirm it or tell me I'm wrong. I thought there was a Baha'i temple in Washington, D.C.,
No, there's not a Baha'i temple there. There's only one Baha'i actual temple, house of worship in all of North America, and that is in Wilmette, north of Chicago on the shores of Lake Michigan.
I see.
There are Baha'i centers, which are just meeting centers, but they don't look like the house of worship that many of the listeners may be familiar with north of Chicago.
Tell us where the center is in Champaign-Urbana.
It's at 807 East Green in Urbana.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. And the temple in Wilmette, you say, is the only one in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite a beautiful building. When would you happen to know when it was built?
The cornerstone was laid in 1912 when the son of Baha'u'llah was in the United States, but it wasn't the temple wasn't completed until 1953 when they had the dedication.
And it's open to anyone to go, and
mm-hmm.
there are quite
mm-hmm.
beautiful grounds around it. It's fairly close to the lake. Is it on Sheridan? I forget.
Yes, it's on Sheridan. It's right across Sheridan Road from Lake Michigan.
Right.
They say the Baha'i symbolism, I don't know the technical thing about this, but all the Baha'i temples around the world, and there's more or less one on each continent, they're round and they have nine doors. And the symbolism is that you can come from any side or any belief and come there and worship. You don't have to be a Baha'i. And usually the devotional programs in the temples have readings from different ones of the great religious traditions, including from the Bible, the Baha'i writings.
We have another caller waiting on a local line number 2. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Sally Weeks.
Yes. I'm wondering if Baha'is would be in agreement with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. about how to overcome... how to break down barriers, how to end discrimination, or if you're more focused on prayer, for example.
I guess I'd have to know what specifically you were asking about Martin Luther King. Certainly, Baha'is have been big supporters of, I think it's the Martin Luther King Center in Atlanta. They've been very active there.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Baha'i view on nonviolence?
It's not the same as Quakers. I grew up as a Quaker, where Quakers are very specifically nonviolent. Baha'is try not to go to war, to be in the army, but if the law requires them to, they will. Whereas Quakers, I grew up in the 60s, and a number of my Quaker friends, of course, burned their draft cards, and Baha'is wouldn't do that.
Okay,
if you see the difference, it's kind of a fine difference there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the question. Sally, I kind of interrupted our discussion earlier about peace. We're titling this program Peace on Earth, a Baha'i Perspective. You were talking about some of the principles that are behind the goals, the ideals, such as economic justice, racial equality, gender equality, elimination of religious intolerance. Are there others that are important to Baha'is as they think about peace?
I usually like to go back to the word justice because so much of what creates the problems in the world today is the lack of justice. I even remember after 9/11, a number of my very liberal friends will say, of course, why wouldn't we be under attack when there are so many people in the world feeling injustice and blaming us for it? I don't take sides politically, but, you know, it is true. And until all the different peoples of the world feel that they have a fair chance, that they count for something, that the world is not divided into haves and have-nots, we're going to have these kinds of tensions.
There was an article in the paper just today that was sent around by one of the news services talking about the extreme differences between the very wealthy and then the pretty wealthy and then mm-hmm. everyone else. And that's grown so much more, not only in this country, but around the world mm-hmm. over the last 20 years, 25 years. The Baha'is, when they think about economic justice, do they talk about ways that things can be more fairly distributed, or do they just count on wealthy people to be generous?
You know, I think that's when we talk about the spiritual solutions. Everybody's heard the line, I think, you know, that, oh, church treasures, and everybody like to say, you know, the good news is we have enough money. The bad news is it's in all of your pockets. We could say that about food to feed the world. We could say that about everything. We have it. It's just not being distributed right. And I don't know if forcing people to do it is the right way. I think people do have to change their hearts. On the other hand, a lot of people might be familiar with the book by Tom Friedman, The World is Flat. You know, like it or not, the world is becoming flatter. We don't necessarily
because all
have
of the
it,
knowledge that everyone has.
It, just because of a lot of things that are going on. Yeah, the internet is a big reason.
Sure.
Tom Friedman loves to give the example of India and all the jobs that they're stealing from us, frankly, because of the way they're going about it. So I think we might not have to force people by government edict to give money from the rich to the poor, but I think this is coming about, and I think it will come about more and more as we understand the nature of sharing.
Did Baha'u'llah have an economic program? Did he push for socialism? Was he a capitalist? Did he make any statements about those kinds of things?
General statements, not specific ones. Okay, one of the pillars of the Baha'i faith, I think you would say, is the elimination of extremes of wealth and poverty. We don't talk about absolute equality because I think people go about their work different ways, so to have absolute equality is very difficult, but certainly there shouldn't be very poor people. There shouldn't be very rich people. There are certain principles in the Baha'i faith. For example, profit sharing is mentioned. If a company is making a lot of money, it should not all go to the owner. It should go to the people that are working to make the money. There are a number of principles like that.
What about unions?
I'm not sure about the answer to that. Ideally, of course, we wouldn't need unions, but clearly in the past there has been a need. So I think if management in general were more understanding of the workers' needs, there wouldn't be such a need for unions. I'm not sure if that's exactly mentioned in the Baha'i Faith.
Are there scriptures that the Baha'is look to for answers to these kinds of questions?
Yes. Baha'u'llah wrote the equivalent of about 100 volumes that is either in his hand or dictated to his scribes that are known to be from him. And then his son, Abdu'l-Bahá, interpreted many of the writings. And then we also had the great-grandson of Baha'u'llah was the guardian of the Baha'i faith for a number of years. He had writings particularly about setting up a world organization. We elect assemblies at every level to the point of an international council. And then now we have the International Council. It's called the Universal House of Justice. And they don't interpret the words of Baha'u'llah or add to them, but they talk about certain things about organization and behavior now.
Now, you mentioned one of the early principles was of gender equality, equality between men and women. And yet you've just mentioned sons and grandsons of Baha'u'llah. Were there not daughters and granddaughters?
Baha'u'llah's daughter, her name was Bahia Khanum, and she was certainly one of the leading women in the Baha'i faith. In fact, she, at the time of her brother's death, Abdu'l-Bahá's death, she took a very leading role. But no, as far as who the people have been, they've been men.
Is there a leader today?
No, just the Universal House of Justice.
Okay. If a new messenger comes for a new time, the 21st century, are Baha'is looking for that, or do they believe that Baha'u'llah was the last messenger?
No, we certainly don't believe Baha'u'llah was the last messenger. We believe there have been messengers in the past from before pre-recorded history, and there will be messengers in the future until the end of time. Baha'u'llah did say, don't expect a messenger for 1,000 years. So I'm not looking for one this century, no. Generally, yeah, generally, I think that's been history. If we look at whom we consider the messengers of God that we know in recorded history, we have Krishna, we have Buddha, we have Jesus, Muhammad, Moses, Baha'u'llah. I'd have to look at the timeline, but probably it's every 500,000 or more years.
So you don't see any signs of that in me, for example. I mean, I don't
No, we're not looking right now. And, you know, we're still building what we consider the what Baha'u'llah told us to build in this world, which is a new civilization based on spiritual principles.
I want to talk about what's calling you to Haifa, to the World Center for Baha'is, in just a moment. But since we're about halfway through our program, let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Sally Weeks, who is a... Let's see, were you born in Urbana?
I was born in Urbana.
Born in Urbana. Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
I went to Leal School, as did some of your family, I know. Right. And then I went to Urbana Junior High School, and I went to Urbana High School. And then
what year did you graduate?
I graduated in 1968.
68. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then where?
And then I flew the coop and went to Earlham College in Richmond, Indiana. Mm-hmm.
And what have you been doing in Champaign-Urbana since... You came back here after college.
Actually, I didn't. I went away. I've lived away from Champaign-Urbana most of my adult life.
How did you?
I've been, mainly I lived in South America. I lived in Caracas, Venezuela for 15 years. And then...
What did you do in Caracas?
I was the managing editor of the English language newspaper there. It was called the Daily Journal. And that's where I met my husband, who is the manager of the newspaper. Huh. And then 12 years ago, my husband retired, and he had never lived in the States, so we came back to Urbana to be with my mother, who my father had died by then. Mm-hmm. And we came to be near my mother and to raise our daughter here.
How old's your daughter now?
She's 19. She followed in my footsteps at Leal School at Urbana
School.
Where
is she now?
She goes to the College of Worcester in Ohio, but at the moment she's studying in South America, too.
And you did that as a college student?
Yes, I did.
And was that Venezuela?
I went to Bogota, Colombia.
Colombia.
Mm-hmm. And my daughter's in Santiago, Chile. So we're kind of, we have a South American bent. My husband was Hungarian by birth, but he was a Venezuelan citizen. He lived there many, many years.
And he's going to Haifa too?
My husband died five years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. When you decided to go to Haifa, you made a 3-year commitment, but you're selling your house here. You're not even sure you'll come back.
No, I probably won't. My daughter's, like I said, in South America at the moment, and I have a feeling she may end up there. So my feeling is to go to Haifa and work for 3 years or maybe more, and then probably join my daughter wherever she is.
And when you've been back in Champaign-Urbana, I know you've been working for the News Gazette recently. Mm-hmm. Is that what you came back to do?
Yes, uh-huh. I've been working at the News Gazette for about 10 years, most recently as features editor. Was very happy to be back there where I had begun my career when I was still in high school, actually.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how long were you features editor?
I was features editor the last 7 years.
7 years. Mm-hmm. And before that?
I was the news editor, the head of the copy desk.
Okay. Our guest is Sally Weeks, and if listeners would like to join our conversation, ask questions or make comments about anything we're talking about, we're talking about peace on earth in general and the Baha'i faith in particular, do give us a call. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, if it's a long-distance call for you, for example, if you're listening on the internet at WILL.UIUC.edu, this is a live program. We're broadcasting on New Year's Eve. And you may call us at 1-800-222-9455. And incidentally, if you missed part of this program and would like to hear it or like to hear other programs from the past, these Keeping the Faith programs are archived at the WILL website. Just go to WILL.UIUC.edu and then to AM 580 and then click on one of the programs that's listed there under Keeping the Faith, and you can hear them on your computer. So my name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. Next week, I'll be talking with Heidi Weatherford and Dave Bechtel about the 100 years of Presbyterian campus ministry here at the University of Illinois. Later in January, David Eisenman will be my guest, and we'll be talking about the ethics of torture. Larry Greenfield will be a guest later. He's an American Baptist executive from Chicago. We'll be talking about some of his interests in Palestine. That's later in here in January on Keeping the Faith. Support for Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA, where I am the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious organization on campus. It's been at the university, well, tomorrow, let's see, it'll be 134 years. So it's been around a long time. The Y began as a Protestant Christian, in fact, evangelical ministry, but early on became welcoming to those of other ideas and traditions, and Catholics joined in, and so did Jews and Muslims and Hindus and Baha'is. So we're open to people of any religious tradition or those of none. And the Y has some interesting programs on lecture series and volunteer opportunities for students and community classes, non-credit classes that people in the community teach and take, as well as university folks. The Y is eager to have people know about its programs, and if you'd like to visit our website, go to universityymca.org or give me a phone call, 337-1500 and area code 217. Again, my name is Steve Shoemaker. Well, let's talk some more with Sally Weeks. How is the Baha'i faith organized? You don't have a pope.
No, not only do we not have a pope, we don't have local pastors. We don't have any professional clergy at all. It's organized in a democratic way. Every location, every city or town or area where there are at least 9 adult Baha'is, they elect what's called a spiritual assembly for that locality. And then every country in the world elects a national assembly, national spiritual assembly for that country. And then all the countries of the world elect the members of the Universal House of Justice, which is the international body.
How long are those terms?
For all the local ones and the national ones, it's 1 year. For the Universal House of Justice, they elect that every 5 years.
Now, the Baha'is make a point to be non-political, to not take stands on particular political issues. Why is that?
Because they tend to be divisive, and the purpose of the Baha'i faith is to unite people with one common goal. And, you know, I had a hard time understanding this at first. I grew up as a Quaker, and in the 60s, heaven forbid, you can imagine, I was very, very active, and then I went to a Quaker college. We were just very, very active. And my first inkling of how sometimes this is divisive and not helpful was my roommate, who, by the way, is living in Amman, Jordan now, and I hope to visit her. I haven't seen her for years. She's married to a Jordanian. And she had grown up in Oman, in Muscat, Oman, and just hearing her viewpoint of things, I started realizing that there were different ways of looking at certain issues that to me were a no-brainer as far as what the proper answer and political view should be. And I saw that she came from a different viewpoint. And so I started thinking, whoa, maybe I should look at this again. And, you know, it happened again when I met my husband. I mentioned earlier he was from Hungary. He grew up during the war. His family suffered very terribly at the hands of the Nazis. He lost many family members in the concentration camps. And then when the Russians came to Hungary, they suffered at the hands of the Russians. Oh. And I realized my husband wasn't very sympathetic to my family's liberal leanings because of his background. And, you know, the more I saw different viewpoints, I thought they might very legitimately have a different political view. And yet our goals should be the same for what we're trying to accomplish in the world. And so Baha'is are asked not to take a political stand or to announce that they're Democrats or Republicans, because if I were to sit here and say I'm a Republican, and knowing that you may not be, immediately that puts something between us. And I don't think we need to argue those issues. I think we can find common ground and goals to work for without going into those political areas.
Well, let me push on that a little bit, because I think that is one of the more controversial stances of the Baha'is. One of your goals is to eliminate the extreme differences in wealth and poverty here and around the world. If we were to talk about how to do that, there'd be several different options. Would you not have an opinion about what would be best? Or as a Baha'i, are you not supposed to try to figure out what would be the best?
Well, I was talking more about partisan politics.
Yeah.
I think we could certainly, there are many things that we would talk about and ways to go yeah. about it. But if you want to ask me who I'm voting for president, I will tell you that's a private matter.
Sure. But just for example, is the best way to help poor people to not have any regulations, let there just be laissez-faire capitalism, and let the money that the wealthy have sort of trickle down as they do? I mean, that's sort of a one way of solving the problem of poverty, but it's one very political way. I mean, it's one way that one party supports much more than another, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Would the Baha'is not?
I think we could discuss certain of those issues.
Okay.
We just wouldn't take a political side or take a partisan view.
Okay. Should there be national health care?
Personally, I think there should be. Yes.
Okay. All right. So you as a Baha'i can express
That's not a Baha'i viewpoint.
That.
That's my personal view.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Would you?
I don't think that's a Democratic or Republican view, personally.
Okay. All right. So do Baha'is, I know they're so concerned with unity that they don't mm-hmm. want to sort of organize around these kind of political differences. But do they organize at all? Would they work to demonstrate for equality between the genders, for example?
Certainly. Baha'is, I think there's been a misunderstanding about that, even sometimes among Baha'is that, you shouldn't join a protest or something.
Uh-huh.
Well, certainly if there's a demonstration for racial equality or if there's, for the equality of men and women, why we should be in the forefront of raising our hands and saying we're for it, you know. It's just the partisan politics that we try to avoid because, hey, some of my best friends are Republicans and some of my best friends are Democrats. What can I say?
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about in terms of peace on earth, our topic for this hour, from a Baha'i perspective. I know the Baha'is are trying to sort of demonstrate a pattern for world government. Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I talked a little bit earlier about how we elect assemblies.
Yes.
One thing I didn't mention is that there's no electioneering. There are no candidates. You can't stand up and say, I nominate so-and-so, and the reason she'd be good is for these reasons. We don't do that. At a Baha'i election, for example, I'll tell you about Urbana. It's the same everywhere. In Urbana, we all get together on a given date, which is the night of April 20th every year. We say prayers together. We talk about the qualities of a person to be on the Baha'i Assembly. The main one is that they're sincere. They're detached from their own desires, that sort of thing. And then we all pray about it. And then you write on your list, on your ballot, the names of 9 people. The assemblies all have 9 people. You think would best be best serve the community on the assembly. And then the 9 people with the most votes are then on the assembly. So you never, there's nothing you can do to posture to be elected, because the minute you would do that, you probably wouldn't be elected, frankly. And so this pattern of having everyone be very democratic, everyone can have a voice, everyone can vote. There's no pressure. Nobody knows who you voted for. Nobody's, like I said, posturing to persuade you. And so it's a grassroots thing all around the world. In fact, I think an argument could be made that the Baha'is are probably the largest, most diverse, widespread, organized group in the world. I think one could argue that.
The most diverse in terms of racial, national.
The most widespread in more localities, most diverse, most organized group on the planet.
How many Baha'is are there?
In the world, about 6.5 million.
6.5 million. Okay. How many in the U.S.?
Oh, about, let's see, about 200,000, I think. I'm not positive about that figure.
In the election process that you say is a pattern for world government, can someone who's elected say no? Can they refuse to serve? Or do they consider that vote that comes from the people a requirement?
If you are elected, you're generally expected to serve. But if you can't, you can't. I mean, I've known people that have said they can't. But in general, if you're elected, it's something you're being asked to do. It's considered service. There's no question about that.
Is it social service, or is it somehow, is there a belief that this is the way God speaks?
That's a tough question. If I've served on the local spiritual assembly of Urbana since I've been here. And
how did it feel to you?
Well, I feel like I should do it. I don't feel like I can say no. I feel like it's a service I'm being asked to do. I don't think I feel like God has anointed me or anything now.
That but would you made be a point of saying that people prayed as part of that process,
yes,
that the assembly prayed.
That's the whole community prays to elect the members of the assembly,
right.
Yeah.
So it seems like there is a spiritual component to that
right,
process.
And that's a very big deal to us, actually.
It is.
It's a very big deal.
Are the prayers allowed? Are they spoken? Are they
silent prayers? Oh, out loud. Both. Yeah, we say prayers out loud. We have many prayers that have been revealed to us, written by Baha'u'llah, by Abdu'l-Baha. They're very beautiful prayers. But also, of course, people are free to pray on their own all the time.
And so people would speak aloud extemporaneously?
We actually don't pray that way. When we pray out loud, we read the prayers that we have because they're so beautiful.
Okay.
It's, you know, really after you get used to them, they're so beautiful. You feel very inadequate saying your own words out loud. But I'm sure many of us do say our own prayers.
Privately. Mm-hmm. And what name for God would say you use?
God.
You say God.
Unless I'm praying in Spanish, which I speak sometimes, and then I would say Dios.
You don't pray to any of the messengers?
That's a good question, because in the prayers, it never says, oh, Baha'u'llah. But there are many references to different messengers or different qualities. So I think you'd have to ask each Baha'i that question.
Do Baha'is believe in the life after death?
Definitely.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. For all?
Yes.
Is there a heaven or hell?
Baha'is believe in heaven and hell. We compare to light and darkness, which is light exists. Darkness is simply the lack of light. A scientist will tell you that, right? There's no such thing as darkness. It's just there's no light. And so we believe in heaven in terms of getting closer to God as our soul progresses. And the more you're deprived of that, the more you're probably living in hell, but no, we don't believe in the fires of hell in that sense.
How are the Baha'is accepted in the nation of Israel? Since Haifa, the World Center for Baha'is, is in Israel now, and that's a Jewish state, how are Baha'is treated?
The government of Israel has an agreement with the Baha'is. The government of Israel has acknowledged that the Baha'i World Center must be in Haifa because of that's where Baha'u'llah lived and is buried. And so they acknowledge that, and they're very nice about it, and they agree to let the Baha'is operate there. The Baha'is don't do any missionary work at all. They don't teach the Baha'i faith there. In fact, the Baha'is don't even elect. There's no national assembly of the Baha'is of Israel. The agreement is the Baha'is will not organize their religion in Israel, will simply operate the World Center. And the Israeli officials are very nice about it, as are the Israelis.
We have another call on our toll-free line, line 4. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Sally Weeks. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I was just listening to the program, and I was wondering when the lady you have on had said that Jesus was a prophet. Is that all she believes that he was?
I believe that Jesus is a messenger of God. I know, like in the Bible, there's Jesus and then there are all the lesser prophets. And no, I think Jesus is certainly more than all of them. And I believe Jesus is sent by God. And Baha'is actually also use the term Son of God to refer to Jesus. We do believe there are other messengers of God, that Jesus is not the one and only, but certainly he's extremely special, and his particular title is the Son of God.
And you did use earlier the term divine.
Right.
But you would also say that Baha'u'llah was divine.
Yes, I would.
As well as human.
Right. And Baha'u'llah's title, the name Baha'u'llah means the glory of God. So I would say Baha'u'llah's title is the glory of God. I would say that Jesus' title is the Son of God.
But not God eternal, pre-existent.
You know, Baha'is don't think that God can send a messenger and Jesus can be the Son of God, but Baha'is don't believe that God can be a human being. But God cannot be reduced to a human being. God is much greater than that. And so Baha'is sometimes use the analogy of God being like the sun and Jesus, or Baha'u'llah, for example, being like a mirror. And so they reflect the sun perfectly, but the mirror is not the same as the sun. Although you could look at a mirror and point to it and say, oh, look, there's the sun, and that's true. But still, it would be hard to reduce the sun to a mirror, just like I don't think you could reduce God to a human form.
All right. The Bible said that he was the fullness of the Godhead bodily, you know. But mm-hmm. I had been to that Baha'i temple years back. My wife and went through it, and it was quite interesting. I served the risen Savior, whereas, you know, Buddha and the rest, there's still bones there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know, I just wanted to make a comment, mm-hmm, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for the comment. The distinction that the caller makes about Christians saying that Jesus rose from the dead, Jesus is divine and human and somehow still living in spirit, at least. What do Baha'is make of that claim?
You know, I wouldn't argue with anything that you just said. Oh. It's just that I think that it could be said also of other messengers of God. The details may be different. If Jesus rose from the dead, I certainly wouldn't argue with that. That, to me, I guess, falls a little bit into the category of the miracles that certainly happen and probably are true, but it's a little hard for us to explain them. Baha'is agree very much in the essential harmony of science and religion. We're big believers in science, which isn't to say we don't believe in supernatural things, because I think they happen, but it's, you know, we have to be very careful as to how we talk about them. And certainly I think the spirit of Jesus, that's really the whole basis of Baha'i belief, is that God keeps the spirit going by sending his messengers. So, of course, I would believe it's still there.
One of the claims of Islam is that Muhammad was a prophet, and followers of Islam would say that Jesus was a prophet, Moses was a prophet, Noah, others. In Islam, they would say that Muhammad was the last prophet, mm-hmm. and so therefore do not accept Baha'u'llah. How do Baha'is, given the persecution of Baha'is by Muslims, starting with Baha'u'llah, respond to that claim?
Well, first of all, remember that all the early Baha'is had been Muslims.
Yes.
Okay, so they did recognize that there was another messenger. I think the term seal of the prophets has a different meaning maybe than what we tend to give it. We think, oh, it means it's the very last one, and I'm not sure that that's what it means. Baha'is believe that there are different cycles of religion, and I think that Muhammad probably was the last of one cycle and Baha'u'llah is the first of the next cycle. Baha'is talk about, if we look at all of humanity and compare it to the life of a human being, all of history, let's say, we think that now, the 19th, 20th, 21st century, is when the human being is coming to the age of maturity. Mankind is reaching adulthood now. So we would say that Baha'u'llah is the first messenger of the adulthood of the human race. So if you look at it that way, maybe it makes sense to say that Muhammad was the seal of the prophets of an earlier cycle.
You were talking earlier about the Baha'i Temple for North America. That's is it Wilmette?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Wilmette. And the fact that it's a dome, a round building with nine doors, and you talked about it being that symbolically being open to all of the major religious traditions. One of those religious traditions is Hinduism. And a couple of weeks back, we had three Hindus on this program, local folks who are trying to establish a Hindu temple here in mm-hmm. Champaign-Urbana, and they're having difficulty. There are people who are objecting to it and saying, "Well, we don't want those people in our neighborhood." Here's an example of religious intolerance. Would Baha'is take a stand on that to help Hindus locally, or would they say, "No, that's political"?
No, I don't see why that's political. Baha'is aren't political in a partisan sense. I think it would be wonderful, personally. Now, again, I don't know if there's no official Baha'i view on this. Uh-huh. Why wouldn't we want a Hindu temple here? It would, you know, we'd all learn more. It would enhance the diversity of our community. It would allow people, there certainly are Hindus here. Why shouldn't they be able to practice their faith? I don't see a problem with that myself. Uh-huh. I would think that the community would be the richer for it.
Hindus would say, well, there are many gods. Do Hindus recognize Baha'is as one sort of legitimate way to worship? Or do you know about that?
You know, I don't know about that, and I wish I did. I need to learn more about Hinduism. From what I've heard, I mean, I know we always hear about Hindus believe in many gods.
Or
but don't
one
they
god
have,
with many manifestations.
Right, and don't they talk about one power above them all?
Uh-huh.
So I'm not... You know, it reminds me a little bit of, I had a Buddhist friend who, Buddhists are fond of saying they don't believe in God. And
sure.
Then, of course, Baha'is another said to them, hey, the God you don't believe in, I don't believe in either. Because of, you know, if you're asked to believe that God is a, you know, man with a white beard sitting up in the sky,
sure.
Most of us don't believe in that. So I really would have to know more about the Hindu belief, I think.
Your mentioning of Buddhism is interesting because Buddhists would say that Buddhists typically do say, "Well, we don't believe that there's one God, that there's a God," and some of them would even say, "Well, Buddhism isn't really a religion; it's a practice, it's a system of meditations and things like that." Do Baha'is consider that one of the nine religious traditions?
You know, we say nine, but there aren't just nine. We don't know how many there are. We're told that there have been messengers of God from before recorded history.
Okay.
And so, yes, I think Buddhism probably does come from a messenger of God originally, but I don't know the exact, there aren't just nine.
Okay. Are there any limits to your tolerance? Would you accept a Scientologist who says, for me, L. Ron Hubbard was a messenger from God. We're a religion. We have these practices we do.
When you say accept, do you mean would I admit that L. Ron Hubbard might be a messenger of God? Because I wouldn't. But do I think that they have a right to their belief and they can do it? I certainly do.
Okay. I guess I'm wondering, are there any religious practices that you would find outside the acceptable boundaries?
You know, I guess I don't know of any offhand to say. I don't know the answer to that, really.
Okay. So some of the, I guess as I think of some of the sort of religious cults of the last 30 years in this country and elsewhere, some of them I thought did things that I, from my Christian tradition, could say, this is not good. This is a bad thing. Your leaders have too much authority. You're doing things that are harmful to yourself, to other people. Can Baha'is ever speak that way?
We don't, but I don't know that we couldn't. Certainly if there was something very obvious like that. Baha'is aren't wishy-washy about their beliefs, really. They're pretty firm, but the way to go about it is not by pointing the finger at other people, I guess.
Okay. you're going to HIFA on Wednesday. What will you do there?
I'm going to be my title is Senior Information Officer in the Office of Public Information. And I hope I'll be, there are a lot of inquiries about the Baha'i Faith from media around the world. Any of the listeners that have been to HIFA know, the Baha'i gardens and the Baha'i buildings, they're spectacular. They truly are. Anybody that's been there knows them. And so there's a lot of interest, a lot of journalists that come around, and I assume I'll be dealing with them.
So you'll be making use of your skills as a journalist mm-hmm. and as an editor?
Right. There'll be a lot of writing involved, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. And what appeals to you about particularly doing that in HIFA for the Baha'i World Center?
You know, I've lived abroad, as I told you before, and I'm very eager to experience a new part of the world. And also, I have to say I truly believe that Baha'is are building something new in the world. And I think that the world will be hearing more about it, and I think it's an amazing example of what can happen in the world, and to be at the heart of it is going to be very exciting for me.
You speak English and Spanish, I presume, mm-hmm. other languages?
Well, I've been trying to brush up a little bit on some Hebrew, not that I can speak it. No, just English and Spanish mainly. And so many Israelis speak English that I don't know how good my Hebrew will ever get. And, of course, reading it is very difficult.
With the most recent violence in Israel, and you say Haifa is, what, 20 miles from
something like, I'm not sure. It's very close to the Lebanese border.
The Lebanese mm-hmm. border. Mm-hmm. Are you worried about personal safety?
I'm not really. A friend of mine from Israel says the people that went to work on 9/11 in New York didn't know they were in danger either. We don't really know. Yeah, my parents, when I first moved to South America, were so worried about me. And, in fact, their house on Washington Street in Urbana got cleaned out one day while they were at work at the U of I. So, you don't know, do we? We don't know what the world holds what the future holds for any of us.
Sure. Well, we wish you well in your time in Haifa. We've been talking with Sally Weeks, who is a Baha'i, who grew up Quaker in Champaign-Urbana and is going to the Baha'i World Center. For people who'd like more information about the Baha'i Faith, the Baha'i Center in Champaign-Urbana is at 807 East Green. Are there regular meeting times?
There usually is a gathering on Sunday morning, just because that's when the Christians, our Christian society, that's when they make time. So we usually have something there on Sunday morning.
What time?
But it's best to, at 11 o'clock are devotions, and generally there's some kind of a class before then, too, at 10 o'clock.
Is there a phone number?
Yes, 337-1808. And then you do leave a message and someone will call you back, and There are Baha'is in many small towns around here, so there are meetings in various towns. So it's worth it to call and find out.
Champaign-Urbana, the number is 337-1808. That's an area code 217 for more information about the Baha'i Faith as practiced here in Champaign-Urbana and around the world. Thanks to Sally Weeks and to our callers for being on the program today. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, and next week I'll be talking with Dave Bechtel and Heidi Weatherford about 100 years of Presbyterian ministry at McKinley Presbyterian Church and McKinley Foundation at the University of Illinois. Later in January, David Eisman will be a guest. We'll be talking about torture, and Larry Greenfield, an American Baptist, will be a guest talking about Palestine. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853.
Smoking cigarettes is bad for you. We can agree on that. So why, then, are 20% of us still smoking? That's 60 million Americans. And new smokers start every day. It's more than just nicotine. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we'll explore the sublime pleasures of taking a puff. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio, adjacent to Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication.